Chapter 4. Plundering Germany. The luxury steamer Manhattan, bearing the 1936 U.S. Olympic team to Germany, was barely past the Statue of Liberty before Louis began stealing things. In his defense, he wasn't the one who started it. Mindful of being a teenaged upstart in the company of such seasoned track deities as Jesse Owens and Glenn Cunningham, Louis curbed his coltish impulses and began growing a mustache. But he soon noticed that practically everyone on board was souvenir collecting, pocketing towels, ashtrays, and anything else they could easily lift. "They had nothing on me," he said later. "I was Phi Beta Kappa in taking things." The mustache was abandoned. As the voyage went on, Louis and the other light fingers quietly denuded the Manhattan. Everyone was fighting for training space. Gymnasts set up their apparatuses, but with the ship swaying, they kept getting bucked off. Basketball players did passing drills on deck, but the wind kept jettisoning the balls into the Atlantic. Fencers lurched all over the ship. The water athletes discovered that the salt water in the ship's tiny pool sloshed back and forth vehemently, 2 feet deep one moment, 7 feet the next, creating waves so large, one water polo man took up body surfing. Every large roll heaved most of the water, and everyone in it, onto the deck, so the coaches had to tie the swimmers to the wall. The situation was hardly better for runners. Louis found that the only way to train was to circle the first-class deck, weaving among deck chairs, reclining movie stars, and other athletes. In high seas, the runners were buffeted about, all staggering in one direction, then in the other. Louis had to move so slowly that he couldn't lose the marathon walker creeping along beside him. For a Depression-era teenager accustomed to breakfasting on stale bread and milk, and who had eaten in a restaurant only twice in his life, the Manhattan was paradise. Upon rising, the athlete sipped cocoa and grazed from plates of pastries. At 9, there was steak and eggs in the dining room. A coffee break, lunch, tea, and dinner followed nose to tail. Between meals, a ring for the porter would bring anything the heart desired, and late at night, the athletes raided the galley. Inching around the first-class deck, Louis found a little window in which pints of beer kept magically appearing. He made them magically disappear. When seasickness thinned the ranks of the diners, extra desserts were laid out, and Louis, who had sturdy sea legs, let nothing go to waste. His consumption became legendary. Recalling how the ship had to make an unscheduled stop to restock the pantries, runner James Louvale joked, "Of course, most of this was due to Lou Zamperini." Louis made a habit of sitting next to the mountainous shot-putter Jack Torrance, who had an inexplicably tiny appetite. When Torrance couldn't finish his entree, Louis dropped onto the plate like a vulture. On the evening of July 17th, Louis returned from dinner so impressed with his eating that he immortalized it on the back of a letter. 1 pint of pineapple juice, 2 bowls of beef broth, 2 sardine salads, 5 rolls, 2 tall glasses of milk, 4 small sweet pickles, 2 plates of chicken, 2 helpings of sweet potatoes, 4 pieces of butter, 3 helpings of ice cream with wafers, 3 chunks of angel food cake with white frosting, 1.5 pounds of cherries, 1 apple, 1 orange, 1 glass of ice water. "Biggest meal I ever ate in my life," he wrote, "and I can't believe it myself, but I was there. Where it all went, I don't know." He'd soon find out. Shortly before the athletes came ashore at Hamburg, a doctor noted that quite a few were expanding. One javelin competitor had gained 8 pounds in 5 days. Several wrestlers, boxers, and weightlifters had eaten themselves out of their weight classes, and some were unable to compete. Don Lash had gained 10 pounds. Louis outdid them all, regaining all the weight that he'd lost in New York, and then some. When he got off the Manhattan, he weighed 12 pounds more than when he'd gotten on 9 days earlier.